Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, top 10 legal battles, Morrissey v the NME. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Maltz. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
This is another in our special series of episodes looking at our 10 favourite music industry legal disputes of all time. On this occasion, we're going to step outside the music industry slightly.
Only slightly.
Very slightly. Into the media industry, although music media. So it's still relevant.
But I suppose in terms of the bodies of law that we are looking at, whereas a lot of these have been to do with either copyright law or the record contracts and publishing contracts, we are now into the world of defamation and libel, which I guess is strictly speaking, media law.
Yes.
But involving a pop star. So yes, it's definitely on our remit.
Yes, this is specifically about that time Morrissey took the NME to court, claiming that it had falsely characterised him as a racist.
Now, for younger listeners listening to this edition of Setlist, we should say two things. First of all, NME used to be a print magazine.
Okay. Right.
That you bought at the newsagent.
The what?
You put money into your pocket and you went to a shop and you took the magazine off the shelf and you paid the money in order to read whatever nonsense the NME journalists had written that week.
This no idea what you're talking about.
Used to happen. Not only that, the NME was quite a big deal in British music, particularly sort of the indie rock pop side of the music industry. It was the weekly magazine that everybody read. I mean, this is 2007. It was already on the wane by 2007, it has to be said. But nevertheless, that's what NME was. Now, we all know who Morrissey is, but for those of you who think that Morrissey becoming a bit of a racist is a new thing, should I say an alleged racist?
Yeah, I think you probably should, given the subsequent content of this episode.
An arguable racist. Morrissey being portrayed by some people as a bit of a racist slash xenophobe slash right-leaning idiot, okay, which is how some people would portray Morrissey today. Well, that's actually been going on for quite a long time now.
Yeah, that's not a, you might think that's a new thing if you're a younger listener. I don't know how young we're going with this.
Not so young that they've never heard of Morrissey.
Yeah, but not a new thing at all. In fact, back in 1992, there was controversy when he told Q magazine that he didn't think black people and white people will ever really get on or like each other. I mean, that's quite a statement. He also, more recent than that, he said that Chinese people are a subspecies when he was talking in the context of the treatment of animals in the country. And then, of course, more recently, there's been his support for more right-wing politicians in the UK.
Yes, it has to be said that when it comes to some of the more controversial movements that ultimately led to Brexit, I guess, and the rise of UKIP and then the Brexit Party, Morrissey was a pioneer. Back in the trendy lefty 90s and the New Labour era, when certainly most people in the creative world were not saying these things, Morrissey was prone. Well, basically, by the mid-2000s, whenever Morrissey gave an interview, it was pretty certain that there would be something in there that would be annoying to those left-leaning creative people in the music industry. And we should add, to the vast majority of the Smiths fan base of old.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I suppose is where, obviously, everyone has a right to opinion. And there are people out there that have left-leaning opinions and people out there have right-leaning opinions. And he's by no means the only pop star that leans to the right politically, even though the creative sector at large tends to lean more to the left. But I suppose it is the disparity between the assumed politics of the average Smiths fan and the seeming politics through interviews of the frontman of that band in the 21st century.
Yes, so this particular bit of that story goes back to 2007 and an NME interview that Morrissey claimed the magazine and its then editor Conor McNicholas had twisted in order to make comments he'd made about immigration make him look racist. He argued that McNicholas had sensationalised the article in its final edit in order to boost the NME's rapidly declining circulation.
Yeah, so by this point, Morrissey already had this reputation of saying slightly contentious things in interviews, But the allegation that was made here was that the editor of the NME, the then editor, Conor McNicholas, who was, well, these days nobody knows who edits the NME. And I think if we're being honest, in the latter part of its history, even when it was still a print magazine, but when it went free, the NME editors had a much lower profile. Whereas this was an
era. Conor McNicholas was a bit of a celebrity editor.
People knew who he was. Yeah. He was opinionated about stuff. He was sometimes himself contentious. He liked to say stuff that he knew would annoy the core NME audience. And it's one of the reasons why I quite liked him when he was head of the NME. Because at CMU, we are a publication that likes to sometimes slag off our own core audience. But yeah, so the allegation here was because people expect Morrissey to say something a bit contentious in interviews, because he has become already by this point associated with more right-leaning opinions, that in this interview that he did for the NME, he said some stuff about immigration, which was then spun into seeming much more, well, certainly xenophobic and possibly racist, so that the NME could then lead with, hey, Morrissey being racist again, you should all buy your copy to see the outlandish things that Morrissey has said in his latest interview.
Yeah, although you didn't really need to buy it because it was quite widely covered. You could you could read in many different places what had been said. The dispute actually began before the article was even published. Morrissey and his then manager, Merck Mercuriadis, became aware that the article might portray the musician in a poor light and spoke out against it about a week or so before it was actually on newsstands.
It is worth mentioning, because it does make this particular dispute stand out, there have been other subsequent interviews that Morrissey has given which have included controversial remarks that he has then said, or I've been misquoted, that has been spun out of control. And sometimes you think, no, that's not true. Whether or not he actually believes these things that he's saying, he said something contentious because that's what he does. And now he's annoyed that it's in the article. Or maybe if you want to be super cynical, he knows he gets more promo by not only saying contentious things, but then being angry about the contentious things. But we should stress with this dispute with the NME back in 2007, that the journalist who had written the article issued some statements that were kind of on Morrissey's side. So it wasn't just Morrissey having said some stuff and then being angry that that stuff had been published. There was more substance, I suppose, to his allegation that some sneaky editing had happened at the NME, which made his remarks about immigration seem much more radical than they really were.
Yeah, so it was Morrissey's now defunct semi-official fan site, True to You, that published an email that the journalist who did the interview, Tim Jones, had apparently sent to Morrissey's reps, saying, "I should mention that for reasons I'll probably never understand, NME have rewritten the Moz piece. I had a read, and virtually none of it is my words or beliefs. So I've asked for my name to be taken off it, just so you know when you read it."
Now, in this pre-publication back and forth, editor Conor McNicholas, he also put out a statement, and he was basically saying that there's nothing to be concerned about, okay? That there isn't an issue here. He said that claims that the article contained anything damaging to Morrissey were rumours and untruths, that the article was in fact fair and balanced, and that Morrissey's words in the article that, remember, at this point had yet to be published, were benign when argued in isolation. He added, "Obviously, no one is accusing Morrissey of racism. That would be mad given what Morrissey says. But we do say that the language Morrissey uses is very unhelpful at a time of great tensions." Was 2007 a time of great tensions?
I think probably.
I think in hindsight.
I mean,
not. But presumably
in context, maybe not. No.
At the time, it felt like we were in time of great tensions. And therefore, the language Morrissey had used in this interview was, according to McNicholas, inappropriate. But there weren't massive racist statements in this interview, as had been rumoured before the interview was even published.
Still, when the article came out a week or so later, it was published under the headline "Big Mouth Strikes Again," obviously a reference to the Smith song and also Morrissey's mouth. And it described what he'd said as inflammatory. Following the quote on immigration, it said, "Oh dear, not again." And it was that which Morrissey took to be an outright accusation of racism. And he and his team immediately threatened legal action.
Yeah, so we got to the legal bit of this quite quickly. So NME were accused of defamation, of libelling Morrissey by portraying him and his comments as being racist. So the threats of legal action of a defamation case came almost immediately, although, as we'll see, it took quite a long time for those threats to come to anything, but there was talk of a libel action from the start. But I suppose before we get into the subsequent legal action, it is worth spending a few minutes discussing what was it that he actually said in this interview that caused all of this hoo-ha?
So the bit of the interview in question came in response to a question about whether he would ever return to the UK from Rome, where he was then living. And he was quoted as saying, "With the issue of immigration, it's very difficult because although I don't have anything against people from other countries, the higher the influxing to England, the more the British identity disappears. If you walk through Knightsbridge on any bland day of the week, you won't hear an English accent. You'll hear every accent under the sun apart from the British accent. England is a memory now. The gates are flooded and anybody can have access to England and join in."
Yeah, so I suppose the implication of that statement, certainly the way it was portrayed in the interview, was having been asked would he ever return to the UK, no, he wouldn't, because he didn't like the UK anymore, because there have been so many immigrants from so many different parts of the world that Britain didn't feel British anymore. I mean, obviously, I'm paraphrasing there, but that, I suppose, is the implication of that quote and the way that it was presented.
Knightsbridge is a strange place to pick.
London itself doesn't really reflect the rest of the UK, does it? I mean, you know, London is a much more diverse place than, well, pretty much anywhere else in the United Kingdom, even the other big cities. And then Knightsbridge in particular, as you say, I mean, it's a huge tourist destination.
Yeah.
I mean, it is true. The properties around there are so bloody expensive that there are a lot of billionaires from elsewhere in the world living there. But actually, most of the people you see on the street don't even live there. They're all going to Harrods. And nobody who lives in London does shopping in Harrods. Only tourists do. So, yeah, it did seem like a weird case study to illustrate your point that there had been so much immigration that the notion of British or English identity was being diluted to an extent that you could hardly see it anymore. But nevertheless, whatever you take from that statement, and as Conor McNicholas had said, I mean, it's not actually a racist thing to say. I mean, Morrissey has said more controversial things before and since this interview. But I suppose the point was that, well, NME was saying, nevertheless, this kind of language is the kind of language used by overtly racist groups. And I guess at this point, it's kind of pre the rise of UKIP and sort of the new right-wing parties and the more overtly racist part. I think it's still BNP, wasn't it, at this point in history? The BNP had had a bit of a resurgence, which was presumably what they were referencing when they talked about times of tension.
I mean, regardless, I mean, if someone says something like that in an interview, it would be a strange thing to then not pass any comment on and just let slip by.
Yeah, and I guess what the NME was saying, what Conor McNicholas was saying, was even if this statement isn't itself racist, which Conor McNicholas thinks that on its own it isn't racist, but it is the sort of language used by organisations like, well, I say at the time, we were probably talking about the BNP, who were overtly racist.
Yeah.
So therefore it is unhelpful. But I suppose, you know, in terms of the dispute between Morrissey and the ME, what Morrissey was saying was, I was just passing some comments on immigration. I wasn't actually making a racist statement. Wasn't even necessarily making a statement about whether or not this was a good thing or a bad thing. Was just explaining that Britain doesn't look like the Britain I remember. And the way it has been presented, the way it has been positioned, and then the headlines being put above it, that's what makes it sound racist. Hence the argument, the allegation of defamation. Although, as we say, although there were threats of legal action immediately, well, it took such a long time for that threat to actually come good that we'd assumed that he'd just got over it all and had stopped worrying about it, because he went off and he released a record and he did some touring. And it was, what, like 4 years later that a lawsuit actually came in?
Yeah, it was in 2011 he issued a lawsuit claiming that the article had been deliberately sensationalised in order to boost the NME's readership, and that the resulting wider media coverage of the article had caused him reputational damage that he continued to suffer to that day.
Now, given that in that legal claim, Morrissey has brought up this idea of reputational damage, I suppose it is worth saying a couple of things about the law of defamation, libel in this case, because it's written down. And if you're trying to sue somebody for libel, there are two elements to any defamation lawsuit, to any libel lawsuit, which is, first of all, you have to prove that there has been an untruth, that somebody has lied. Okay, if somebody doesn't lie, then there is not a case for defamation. But crucially, it's not just about lying. It's not just about the untruth. There has to be damage to the individual as a result of the lie. And that's always a key requirement of anybody who's going to sue for libel. It's not enough to say that person lied. You have to show that there is damage. I sometimes do media law workshops, not as much as copyright workshops, but I occasionally do media law workshops. The example I give, would you like the example I give?
Yeah.
So the example I always give is, let's say I was to say in the CMU Daily that Justin Bieber's favourite crisps were Pringles.
Right.
When I know he actually prefers Walker's crisps.
Right.
But in the CMU Daily, I said, oh, no, no, Justin Bieber likes Pringles. And I knew that was a lie.
Slow news day.
Well, that'll probably be in the And Finally slot next week. We have slow news days. And usually we pad out the Daily with nonsense Justin Bieber stories.
True, okay.
Well, certainly we used to. But the point is, even if I knew that was a lie, there's not a case for defamation there if I tell you that Justin Bieber prefers Pringles to Walker's crisps. However, if the CMU Daily was not a music publication and I was to make the same statement about Gary Lineker, let's say it was the Sports Daily or something, and I was to say Gary Lineker's favourite crisps are Pringles, not Walker's, then, and I knew that was a lie, it was an untruth, well, now there would be a case for defamation because obviously, does he still do the Walker's ads?
Or
is this now a dated example?
It's 2020 now, I don't see adverts anymore.
Let's assume Gary Lineker does still do ads for Walker's crisps. He certainly did in 2007. So this example would have worked in 2007 or 2011, whenever this lawsuit came in. The point is that when Gary Lineker was the brand advocate, ambassador of Walker's, paid a lot of money, then obviously it would be damaging for him if I or a newspaper said, aha, Gary Lineker doesn't like Walker's, he prefers Pringles. So that's an example of the lie in itself is not enough. You've got to show, first of all, that there was an untruth. Now, sometimes that is tricky in itself. And actually, in this case, it is a little bit ambiguous as to whether or not a lie has occurred, an untruth has occurred. But in addition to that, you've also got to prove that the person who was lied about has been damaged in some way. If you can prove both of those things, you have a case for defamation for libel.
Yes, and so that brings us to NME's then publisher IPC Media's response to this lawsuit, which was to immediately argue that the case should be dismissed because Morrissey's reputation had clearly not been damaged. They argued that since he'd been able to release an album and tour quite successfully and apparently still had quite a big fan base willing to buy those albums and go to those tour dates, he couldn't claim that he had suffered reputational damage. They also argued that it would be unfair to ask the people involved in the article to try to remember editorial decisions they'd made 4 years ago.
Yes, so I suppose that time lag, the fact it took him 4 years to do anything, provided two arguments, two elements of defence for IPC. First of all, yeah, as you say, if we now get everybody involved in the writing and editing of that article into court and we ask them some questions, how can they possibly remember the decisions that were made 4 years ago? Most of those people have moved on now anyway, they're doing other jobs. But crucially, because you'd had this 4 year delay, you know, had he sued immediately after publication, then there would have been a debate about, okay, to what extent has he been damaged? Has his career, has his business been negatively impacted by this article? And if this was all happening within months of the article coming out, then that would be a debate to be had in court. But what IPC were able to say is, well, because 4 years have passed, and in those 4 years, it's not that Morrissey has been hiding away, that society has said, no, we don't want Morrissey anymore, we're not going to listen to Morrissey or watch Morrissey perform. He's actually spent the last 4 years being a pretty successful musician, selling records, selling tickets, doing what musicians do. His business is still a successful artist business. So therefore, because we've got 4 years to show that actually his business is as successful as it would have been had that article not been published, therefore, although they were not necessarily accepting that they had lied or misrepresented Morrissey in the article, they were kind of saying that's irrelevant anyway, because whatever we think about what we published and how accurate a representation it was of what Morrissey said in the interview, there is no damage, so there's no case of defamation, was IPC's argument. And as you say, what they wanted was for the judge to just throw the case out with no further consideration.
But the judge did not do that. Judge Michael Tugendhat rejected that motion and approved the case to go to the High Court for a full trial the following year, 2012. Welcoming that decision, Morrissey issued a statement saying, "In 2007, the NME viciously attacked me and labelled me a racist and a hypocrite. Last week, they sought to avoid facing me in court to settle the matter once and for all. I'm delighted that the NME's attempt to stifle my claim was unsuccessful, and that as a result, I will be able to use the very public forum of the High Court in London to clear my name loud and clear for all to hear."
And so we thought we're going to get a proper court case here. And even though
Morrissey is talking tough,
even though personally I think that IPC Media's arguments about him not having suffered damage, those are pretty good arguments, but nobody wants cases to be dismissed straight away. And we got ready. We were getting ready for a good pop libel case in court. By this point, he'd become somewhat estranged from his manager. So it would have been interesting to see what Merck would have said in court had he been called to testify. You also had a new editor at the NME who had instigated quite a change at the magazine.
But had been the deputy editor at the time this took place.
When Colin Nicholas was still in charge. Plus, of course, we'd had that email, that supposed email from the journalist Tim Jones, where he had been distancing himself from the article. So it's like, I says, this is going to be great. We're going to have some real fun. Plus Morrissey on the witness stand. That will be brilliant. And in those initial statements, Morrissey seemed full on. Because obviously, the cliche here at CMU and on Setlist is, whenever there's a good case incoming, it will never get to court. They will settle.
Yes, that is our mantra, I guess. These things almost never actually get to court. But we really thought that this one would. And I guess we've ruined the surprise now that this did not get to court. Because although it got very close to the trial date in June 2012, after much anticipation, the settlement deal was announced.
Actually, the day before the settlement was confirmed, we kind of knew we were not going to get the fun and enjoyment of covering a messy libel legal action in court with Morrissey on the witness stand, because the NME basically published an apology on its website. It said, in December 2007, we published an article entitled Morrissey Big Mouth Strikes Again. Following this, Morrissey began proceedings for libel against us. His complaint is that we accused him of being racist off the back of an interview that he gave to the magazine. He believes the article was edited in such a way that made him seem reactionary. We wish to make clear that we do not believe that Morrissey is racist. We didn't think we were saying he was, and we apologise to Morrissey if he or anyone else misunderstood our piece in that way. We never set out to upset Morrissey, and we hope that we can now both get back to doing what we do best.
IPC itself then issued a further statement confirming that the deal had been done, saying, NME is pleased that it has buried the hatchet with Morrissey in respect of the libel case he brought against us. Morrissey sued over an article based on interviews with him, which he believed accused him of racism. After an ongoing dialogue with Morrissey and his representatives, NME Today publishes a clarification in the magazine and online, which makes it clear that we do not believe we ever called Morrissey racist, nor do we believe he is. We have said sorry to Morrissey for any misunderstanding that may have arisen. They then also gave details of the settlement, was a key thing in any settlement. You want to know how much money's changed hands.
Not much.
Not much at all. If any, a bit, tiny little bit. It said, the settlement with Morrissey does not involve any payment of any damages or legal costs, other than the small sum of costs which the court ordered NME to pay last year when we applied unsuccessfully to have the case struck out on grounds of delay.
It's kind of interesting with hindsight, isn't it, that whatever you believe Morrissey has said over the years and more recently in more recent years and whatever your opinions about what he said, it does feel that in 2020 we've got to the stage where most music media are happy to not have a relationship with Morrissey and to negatively report on the things that he says. Where it's interesting, back in 2012, when they reached this settlement deal, NME clearly believed that even though Morrissey was already known for saying these contentious things at this stage, that as a music magazine, it still needed to have a good relationship with Morrissey, that they were going to want to interview Morrissey again in the future, they were going to want to cover his music. And so therefore, as well as trying to get the legal issues out of the way so they don't have to take this case in court, they were clearly trying to make up the damage that had been done so that they could continue to have a decent PR relationship, I guess, with Morrissey and his label and his team. Whereas 10 years on, I'm not sure many music magazines, including the NME, would really, and obviously they don't want to be sued for libel, the legal bit would still be there, but in terms of trying to be quite sycophantic towards Morrissey to try and make up the PR relationship, I don't think anyone would care anymore.
Yeah, because since then, of course, Morrissey has made more comments about immigration in various interviews. He's showed support for a British right-wing political party. And while, I mean, as you sort of said there, it's become more commonplace for people to outright accuse Morrissey of racism, but for the most part, he's more issued grumpy dismissals on stage and on his own website than thrown out legal threats. Although there was one instance of him claiming to have been misquoted more recently that did look like it might turn into a bigger dispute.
Yeah, so whereas with the frequent articles and social media posts basically slagging him off for what he says and accusing him more openly in more recent years of actually being racist rather than possibly twisting his words, as you say, in the main, although he never seems happy about that, in terms of there being outright objections that might ultimately lead to litigation. We haven't really seen that again since, except for that one interview he did with the German magazine Der Spiegel.
Yes, although on that occasion, that wasn't just about immigration. In fact, the focus more then was on his comments relating to the Me Too movement, in which he was seen to defend Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, claiming that their alleged sexual assault victims were somewhat to blame themselves for what had happened to them. The publication also wrote him up as saying that it was no longer possible to tell someone you like them without being accused of assault, that he would kill Donald Trump given the chance, and that multiculturalism had made Berlin the rape capital of Europe.
So some different issues on what to be contentious there, except at the end bringing it back round to, I guess, issues of multiculturalism and immigration. Morrissey then issued a statement, I guess a little bit like he had done with the NME interview back in the day, in which he was basically saying, I didn't say that, I was misquoted, they have misrepresented what we talked about in the interview.
He actually at that point said, well, he said a couple of things. One, that you should not believe anything he's quoted as saying unless you hear it come from his mouth directly, and the other, that he was going to just stop doing interviews. I don't think that is true. I'm pretty sure he's done interviews since, and with controversy included.
Responding to that, and possibly keen to ensure that they didn't end up in the same situation that NME had in 2007/2011 and 2012, Der Spiegel actually published the recording of the interview.
Yes.
Because whenever you interview somebody who's likely to say something contentious, it's always wise to tape it. And so they were basically saying, well, Morrissey says that you can only trust what he says in his own words, not what a journalist writes up. So here, listen to Morrissey in his own words and form your own conclusions, I guess, is what they were saying.
Yeah, so that somewhat concluded that dispute there. I mean, of course, I mean, Morrissey does continue to have a career. He continues to record. He continues to tour. I mean, he might have a better case to argue some sort of reputational damage now. There was a lot of controversy around a covers album he released, I think it was last year. The controversy was more that he'd worked with some relatively big name collaborators, and everyone was a bit confused why they'd worked with him, or in the, at least over in the UK and Europe, they were confused. They were all North American. And I mean, one of those collaborators said, when questioned about it, like, I didn't realise there was any controversy. I thought it was just the guy from The Smiths and he's really cool.
Yeah, so possibly there is a Atlantic divide in this. It definitely feels here in the UK that there has been a significant backlash towards him. And indeed, I mean, I know some people who even extend the backlash to saying that they struggle to listen to Smith's records from back in the day, or they try and find Johnny Marr singing Smith's records rather than having Morrissey singing them, and then they listen to them instead. But yeah, it's interesting as you go around the world. I think the comments he has made, not the NME interview, but other comments he has made, other interviews, where he has been either rightly or wrongly portrayed, who knows? But over the last 10 years, here in the UK for definite, and possibly elsewhere in Europe, it has had a negative impact. But yeah, it's interesting that possibly he still has a bigger audience in the US, simply because a lot of the comments he has made are very specifically about life in the UK or possibly elsewhere in Europe. And those articles haven't exported, they haven't been read. So he still has a much bigger audience and is seen as being a slightly less controversial character back in North America as opposed to over here. Who knows? But what we can say is that both Morrissey and the NME were a big deal in 2007. So that was quite a big, interesting legal dispute when it occurred. Also took us into the world of defamation rather than copyright. But the particular dispute between Morrissey and NME was happily resolved through settlement in 2012.
Yes, but that's all we've got time for on this special edition of Setlist. For more Setlist in your ears, why not subscribe on your podcast app of choice? We're available, I think, everywhere, so you should do that. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook. It's produced by Archan Mohile. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at unique facilities, Setlist is an unlimited production.